Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times in Bloomington, along with Adam Ragusea today from WFIU, and our guest will be Indiana University President Michael McRobbie. If you have questions or comments for the president, you could phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu, and we'll try to start taking those calls and emails in a little bit. The president's we've had to start a little bit early today. Today's a very, very strange day.
Yeah, today's an exciting day for those of us in the news business, certainly, and for everybody else around the Bloomington area, certainly. Right. A lot going on.
Yeah, we have, of course, Hillary Clinton is coming to town. The latest word we have is that she's going to be here at 2 o'clock today.
Oh, really?
Yes, and the O'Bannon Institute is something I've been involved with for the last 3 years. It's at Ivy Tech Community College today, and their speaker that I'm scheduled to interview at 2:30 is Paul Begala, who's a former counselor for President Bill Clinton.
And of Crossfire fame.
And a Crossfire fame. And he also ran he and James Carville ran the first Clinton campaign and run several campaigns. So that will be interesting, and that's going to get me out of here at halftime of this show. So,
well, I'll try to fill your shoes as best I can at that point, Bob. I should make some notes for those of our listeners who are hearing us in the future right now, because we're going to be rebroadcasting this program on Monday. So if it's Monday where you are, you won't be able to call in, but we're still going to be bringing this program to you because we know there's a lot of interest in it. So much of our listenership is affiliated with Indiana University and some way or another. So many folks in our community are invested in it. And you know, Bob, this is the time of year when the campus of IU Bloomington becomes just one of the most beautiful places on earth. I mean, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it absolutely is. And it's just great to drive through here and see all the activity and everything that's going on. You know, the reason we're broadcasting at 1, if anybody has sort of tuned in and isn't aware of it, is because the state public broadcasting system did a two-day session with the two Democratic gubernatorial candidates. Joe Long Thompson was yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And we had Jim Schellinger earlier today.
Jim Schellinger was today. And so that bumped us back to 1 o'clock for Noon Edition, which is sort of ironic.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think we're going to be able to get the president here in just a moment. I can see him making his way. And we're going to be delighted to have him.
Yeah. So Michael McRobbie has been here with us before.
Sure.
He needs no instruction on how to do anything. So it's
all right. And he's making his way to the microphone at this moment.
Right.
President McRobbie, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Adam and I were talking, this has been kind of a crazy day. I'm sure you have a lot of crazy days, but
Bit of a crazy year, Bob.
That's true. It has been a crazy year. But today, with all the activity going on in town, and of course, next weekend's graduation. That'll be a nice weekend for you, too.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's, what is it? I think it's 9 separate graduations I have to do.
Wow.
All over the state.
Yeah.
Bloomington next weekend, and then after that, two Bloomington graduations next weekend, then all the regional campuses and IUPUI.
Yeah, well, we appreciate your taking your time out today. And
delighted.
And we appreciate the flexibility that you had. We're certainly not used to being here at 1 o'clock for Noon Edition. That's for certain. But thank you very much.
A problem about truth and advertising.
Yeah, right.
That's right, exactly.
Well, we have several things we want to talk to you about today. And
sure.
I would like to start with an issue. You know, I've got a list of several things that you've set as your agenda, and one of them has to do with minority enrollment and more diversity on campus. And just last week, or it might have been earlier this week, the Faculty Council, their Diversity and Affirmative Action Committee's annual report came out. And it showed some progress, but it still showed that IU is, I believe, 11th out of the Big Ten, which is 11 institutions, and the University of Chicago. So 11th out of 12 in terms of faculty diversity of faculty. And I want you to comment on that. Is that do you see that as progress, or is there a lot of work to be done?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt, Bob. There's a lot of work to be done. Part of the problem is actually finding the right way of dealing with this issue. I think the other problem we face is that minority faculty are frankly very much in demand, and I know that in the case of a number of schools, they've made offers to quite a number of minority faculty to have them all rejected. Now, what I think we may not have done full analysis on yet is what the reasons were for not accepting our offers. Were they salary-related or other reasons? I expect they could be salary-related, but I think at least in some parts of the university, like obviously I think the law school with a new gift from the Lilly Endowment, they may be able to address that problem there. But I certainly see evidence of improvement, and I know that without going into detail because we don't have all the detail yet, but we're pretty optimistic about the makeup of our incoming freshman class, although it's still not defined. We don't have all the details in yet, but so far minority applications are up considerably.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Now, the percentage, I believe, is 16% of the IU Bloomington's total faculty is minority, and that's higher than the student body as a whole, is it not?
It is. Yeah. It is, yeah. The student body in total is less than 10%.
Yeah, so you're making some good strides on the faculty.
That's right, yeah. But it's clearly you want to be a little closer to the balance in the state, and the state percentage is closer to the faculty mix, which is interesting. But I think that's why we'd like to see that student figure come up, and I think we will make inroads next year.
If I could just ask, why is it important having a diverse faculty and a diverse student body? In your mind specifically, why is it important?
Because, I mean, I think there's a combination of responses. Firstly, because it ensures that the student body and the faculty body, the staff body too, which we shouldn't forget here, reflects something like the composition of American society, so that that students aren't being educated in a sort of an anomalous environment from that point of view. I mean, it gives them something closer to the environment in which they're going to work when they move out of the university. It's the first thing. Second thing is that some of our financial aid programs that we've developed over the last couple of years, in particular the 21st Century Scholars Program, has been a way of trying to ensure that very able young minority students can actually, from very low income backgrounds, family incomes of less than $50,000, can actually get an IU education. And our Matching the Promise campaign and various other initiatives that we put in place have actually made the cost of an education for students who in that category who are disproportionately minority almost free.
All right, we've got a phone call already, so let's go to Steve on the phone. Steve?
Hello, President McRobbie.
Yes.
I'm honored to have this opportunity to speak with you. I have a 30-year relationship with Indiana University as a student, employee, and alumnus. IU is a great institution, and I care deeply about its future, so I was very happy to see the IU Sustainability Report that was published last year. But I'm disappointed that not much action has been taken since then. I know there are students and faculty who have taken up the cause, but I haven't heard much from the administration.
Well, there's been, for example, I think it was just 2 weeks ago, there was the announcement of a major new center in environmental science called CRESS that is directly in alignment with exactly what was called for as part of the sustainability report. The report, if you've read it, is extremely extensive, very detailed, very impressive piece of work, but it cuts across probably nearly every portfolio, every vice presidential portfolio in the university. So after having had a number of discussions on it already in the key with the key senior administrators in the university, what we're in the process of doing now is looking at which office should take responsibility for consideration of some of the very large set of recommendations there to see just how feasible, realistic, and so on they are. So that work has now been done by Vice President Klapac's office, and at the next meeting of my cabinet, which I think is in about 3 weeks, we will be looking at the report at a much higher level of granularity. Let me say that this is an extremely important issue, but there are a whole range of very important issues, and we simply want to ensure that that rather than respond in a knee-jerk way, that we give this appropriate and serious consideration. And if we want to, if some of these changes are going to actually happen, we want to do them in the most effective way in the offices in the university that have responsibility for that area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you're taking this seriously, and I want to suggest one thing. A good place to start would be with transportation and parking policy, because great gains can be made at relatively low cost in that sector.
Right. Let me say on that in particular, I completely agree with you. One of the things that that I did that you may be aware of is that early this year in January, I appointed a new master planner for the university and have given the master planner basically this calendar year to complete a major new master plan for this campus and for our Indianapolis campus. I met with him just this week to get a sort of a progress report. Transportation, making the campus more pedestrian-friendly, rationalizing parking, et cetera, is a major, major item on his agenda. And I expect that the recommendations that come out of that will, over the longer term, really start to address that. But I don't think we're any different to most other campuses. Everybody understands that the model for parking and transportation that may have worked 30 or 40 years ago really does need a serious overhaul.
Excellent. Thanks for listening.
Pleasure. All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Steve. 855-0811 is our local number, 877-285-9348 from outside of the Bloomington area. And you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. And I'll remind you again that we're going to replay this program on Monday. So if it is Monday, you can't make those calls. I wanted to ask about the governor's announced plan this week to try to help make higher education accessible. I mean, his proposal says that it would assure Indiana high school graduates are guaranteed 2 years of paid tuition at Ivy Tech Community College or the equivalent at one of Indiana's colleges or universities. What kind of involvement or input did you have into that plan? Do you think this is something that will be of benefit to Hoosiers?
Oh, this is very much the governor's plan, but I think he has been. I'm speculating, but I believe he's probably been influenced by the nationwide debate about accessibility and affordability in universities, and has probably seen what we have done, and then more recently what Purdue has done in this area, and is I believe probably thinking about how does one generalize that model to the whole state. It will be interesting for Indiana University, especially on the Bloomington campus, given, as I was just saying to Adam, that we've put in place all of this financial aid and through private philanthropy, where for students in that very low-income category, pretty much all their cost of attendance at the university is actually taken care of. So the question will be, how will the governor's plan, as best we understand it from relatively brief details at the moment, impact that? So I've actually already asked our CFO and provost and Chancellor Mance at APUI and a couple of others to start looking at what the impact of that plan or variations on it will have for us. I mean, it'll obviously be positive. And, of course, the other key consideration is how will this be funded? And that, of course, is a matter for the governor and the legislature. And but I think in general we applaud any initiative by the state that both encourages students to get degrees, associate's degrees or full baccalaureate degrees, and anything that stresses to students the importance of education, the value of education, anything that makes it easier for students from low-income backgrounds to get those kinds of education. So the governor's, I think, to be commended for that.
And I suppose that anything that increases enrollment at Ivy Tech is ultimately down the line going to increase or in some way impact Indiana University as more people are being brought into higher education in general.
Well, I think that bringing more people into higher education in general in the state is an unambiguous good. And I think that for a university with 8 campuses and 100,000 students, with more closely developing relationships with Ivy Tech, we just signed an agreement between IU East and Ivy Tech just a month or so ago. And we're in this fortuitous situation where you have both a new president of IU, well, relatively new now, a new president at Purdue and a new president of Ivy Tech. And all three of us have hit it off very well And the model that we put in place with East just a month or so ago between myself and President Snyder is a model we want to look at putting in place all over the state for all our campuses with respect to their local Ivy Techs. And what that's going to do is I think, improve the ability to articulate an Ivy Tech education for the best Ivy Tech students to convert it into an IU education, and if they do well enough on a regional campus to convert it into a Bloomington or IUPUI education.
All right, we have a phone call. Let's go to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, and it's a pleasure to speak to you, President McRobbie.
Delighted.
I'm actually a professional staff on campus, and I just wanted to reiterate a comment or expound on a comment you made about the importance of diversity in, among students and faculty. I think you're off to a great start. You have an incredible staff, professional staff and administrators that are working on these issues. I would just add that diversity in the classroom has been shown to enhance the intellectual development of all students. You get multiple perspectives on different issues.
Right.
And it's not just racial diversity, but regional, international perspectives. When you're dealing with an issue, if there's people who are from different backgrounds that bring different perspectives, it just adds like a rich, thick,
right,
descriptive sense to different policy issues or experiences, and that really enhances the intellectual development of all students and prepares IU students to enter a world that has a global economy and changing demographics and such.
Yeah,
I want to thank you for the work you're doing, and keep up the good work, and your staff is amazing.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me add that I agree exactly with your point, and that was why when I appointed Vice President Ed Marshall, his title as Vice President for Diversity, Multicultural Affairs, and Equity, and it picks up exactly those points, and his responsibilities pick up exactly those points that you raised.
Yes, and he's my boss, and he's doing an amazing job. So thank you for appointing him, and I think you're going to see some great results coming out of his division.
He's an excellent man. In fact, I think he's giving some major international address in overseas at the moment as we speak.
Oh, fantastic. Mm.
All right, Eric. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. And Ed Marshall's been – he was a guest on this program too.
Yep.
All right. 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and noon@indiana.edu. Wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about the plans for a technology park out on 10th Street, essentially around 10th and the bypass. You know, we had a story in our paper recently about some of the shifting – wins, I guess, about technology parks in our community, because there had been a plan to try to create one in the downtown area, and I believe the city can't really create one without IU having a major impact. So your plan to create one more on the east side, talk about the advantages of that.
Right. I think if you look at some other models, and you don't even have to go outside the state to look at models of successful technology parks, the job that Purdue has done with Discovery Park is first rate. I'm a great fan of what President Jiske did to establish Discovery Park, and of course they have another park which is more of a commercial technology park as well. These are very large scale enterprises, and if we are to establish a comparable facility, which is my goal, we're going to need a number of things. One of them is the space to be able to expand in that direction. And the second is co-location with some key parts of the university that will be of direct importance and relevance to possibly commercial partners, or certainly to people interested in taking university intellectual property and commercializing it in some way. So at 10th and the Bypass, which is really going to become the center of our activities in that area, in fact, at the trustees meeting Thursday, the final proposal for the incubator, a site for the incubator that I announced in my inauguration speech, will go to the trustees there, and so that'll be that building there, the data center, which is really the hub of certainly this campus, and to some extent the university's IT infrastructure is proceeding at a fairly rapid pace out there as well, and we have a plan for a further building that would support IT out there, which is not yet fully funded, but the hope is that we can expand in that area in support of the university's aims and activities in economic development. I should also point out that there are some other important facilities out there as well. The auxiliary library facility, which obviously is a storage place for books that they really can't store in the World's Library, but it also has, importantly, a significant conservation part to it. There's also going to the trustees on Thursday will be a recommendation to expand that considerably as well. So that really is the area that will combine both our technology initiatives and many of our auxiliary relatively high-tech services out there as well.
Okay. This is a time of a very high interest in politics locally. And I didn't want today to get by without asking you about the fact that we've had presidential candidates on campus this year for the first time maybe since I think it was 90 years ago in Bloomington. what does that kind of opportunity mean to the university and to the students of the university?
Oh, I think it's just wonderful. It's 11 and a half years here, going into 12 years here, having lived through a number of previous federal election campaigns, we've got almost no attention. I mean, in fact, I could probably say we've had no attention.
I think that's fair to say.
It'd probably be true. All of a sudden, there's massive attention that the state's getting for reasons we all know. But I think for students, it really brings the abstract of a federal election campaign home to them as to what it comprises, the issues, the debates, the party system, how it's functioning, the primary system within the parties, how that functions, and so on. So I think this is our students who are interested in politics, which certainly seems to be an increasing number. This because the enthusiasm for one candidate or the other from all three candidates seems to be at a level beyond which I can remember in previous years. And it really is a practical laboratory for the students to learn about the civic political process.
Have you heard anything from any of the candidates about higher education that have struck you as a particularly creative idea?
That's a good question, Bob. I haven't really heard anything that I would say was unique or novel yet. I'm hoping maybe that will change. I think there seems to be a general understanding of the importance of basic research, and I believe that both the senators who are fighting it out at the moment, I think are supporting the additional funding that was cut out of the budget last year for the Department of Energy, which meant that such great facilities as Fermilab, where we have scientists from time to time work, lost a large amount of funding to the, I think, extreme detriment of American science. And I wrote a letter to all of our delegation, and the university presidents at other universities comparable to ours have been doing the same thing, stressing the importance of restoring that funding for those great scientific institutions.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have another phone call. It's Paul this time. Paul?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, President McGarvey. How are you?
Good.
I want to follow up on the earlier question about the sustainability report. It's really two-parter. First of all, when might we expect to hear from you after the deliberations of the various vice presidents and other administrators about what the university is going to do about a formal declaration of involvement in sustainability? For example, there's the Talwar Declaration, I'm sure you're familiar with, mm-hmm. That hundreds of other presidents of universities in this country and others have signed on. That indicates a commitment to sustainability campus-wide. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, I'll just make two comments. We are at the absolute busiest time of the year, and it's been for a variety of reasons, and particularly busy semester. This is something that we'll have more time to deal with over the summer. But let me just say, with respect to declarations, there's a variety of declarations out there. you don't you don't have to sign a declaration to understand the importance of sustainability. I mean, I don't believe there's a link between the two, firstly. And secondly, as far as some of these declarations are concerned, there are many major public universities like ours who have not signed some of these declarations because they think they are unrealistic for a large public university that is expanding. So this to me is a matter which is, as a university administrator, we should not jump into in a knee-jerk way. We need to look at it dispassionately with respect to what are the interests of the university and the community and so on as well. And that's what we're in the process of trying to do.
What form, then, would you say the university might take if not signing on to somebody else's declaration? What form of commitment do you think the university might take?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the commitment that we've already made in a whole variety of ways and an expansion of those. I mean, I think it's I've already indicated that, for example, transportation and parking is a major issue that I've asked the master planner to address. We've established at least one major new research center in the last couple of months. I know there's actually very interesting discussions going on between a number of research centers at the Bloomington campus and at APUI about possibly combining them into one very large scale center across both campuses, and those discussions are ongoing. Why this is important to me is that as a university, we have stacks of first-class scientists who are thinking hard about the whole range of different issues and problems in this area, and a solution, a radical innovation coming out of one of our laboratories could have a vaster effect on these issues than many other actions that we could take that may be more incremental. So I'm particularly supportive of a more robust intellectual agenda in this area. At IU. I think as a great research university, this is exactly what we should be doing.
And you feel like the faculty and administrators and students have received that message from you that you are, in fact, so strongly supportive of sustainability-related efforts?
Well, I think I've answered the question. I mean, I think I've made it clear through a number of initiatives that I've been responsible for that the university takes these issues very seriously.
Well, we appreciate the call from Paul, but I just want to mention that we have a lot of emails here that we're looking at, and so many of them are on the issue of sustainability, and there's a couple of points I do want to try to get in before we hit halftime. And it seems that the common thesis across all of them is people are wondering if the university is willing to do things that might hinder its short-term competitiveness for the long-term benefits of sustainability. One of the questions that got brought up in, I think, three of these emails is, will the university look at taking steps to discourage underclassmen from bringing their cars to campus?
Well, I'm not going to go into the fine detail of how these things might work. I mean, I think that, as I said, we're dealing with this in a much more detailed, complete way through the master planning effort. Exactly what the right model is there for what the order of what the hierarchy is of parking among students and faculty and staff will at least be there will at least be recommendations or comments in that area there. Clearly, one always has to make the judgment of long term benefit versus short term pain. I think historically, though, one finds that people who indicate they may be willing to deal with short term pain in reality take a different tack when they actually have to deal with the consequences. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, we actually have hit our halftime now. And I'm going to have to be taking my leave and turning it over to Adam because of the commitment I've made with the O'Bannon Institute. When this program got moved later, I have to take my leave. So.
It's just another example of how well we're the synchronicity between IU and Ivy Tech.
That's right. And it troubles me deeply to miss the second half of the program. But we are doing an interview today with Michael McRobbie, the president of Indiana University. We're thrilled to have him here. And if you want to call in your questions, 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. Or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage, using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunnstreet.info. WFIU thanks all who support public radio. Next time you're visiting one of our business supporters, please let them know that you appreciate their support of WFIU. Perhaps you're involved in decision-making at a business or profession in the WFIU listening area. If you'd like your message to reach WFIU listeners, you can find out more about benefits of underwriting with a call to 1-800-662-3311 or a visit to our website at wfiu.org.
And are we back? All right, we're back. And it's Noon Edition here. I'm Adam Ragusea. I'm not going to sit in for Bob Zaltzberg as well as I can. And we have another half hour. We're privileged to have Indiana University President Michael McRobbie here and willing and able to answer all of your questions. 855-0811 is the local call. The toll-free number is 877-285-9348. Or you can send an email to noon@indiana.edu, and we look forward to getting some more calls. But before we get there, Mr. President, it's dead week here on the Indiana University campus, and everyone's getting ready to take their finals and get out of here. So it's a good chance to look at things in retrospect. And what would you say is your best moment of this year? What have you achieved over the course of this academic calendar that you're most proud of?
Well, there's many things. I mean, I outlined a pretty ambitious and aggressive agenda in my inaugural speech, and most of those, though not quite all of those, have now been we've started to take action on all of them, which I'm very pleased about. But just to give you an idea of some of the things that I'm very pleased about, last year, about July, August, I appointed a new team of administrators, a major new administrative team, 8 new vice presidents, because we had a series of retirements and resignations and so on. And this is a first-rate team that is obviously going to play a major role in leading the university forward. So I was very, very pleased to have got such a good team and to have attracted some really first-rate people to join my administration. Secondly, matching the promise, which of course started certainly well before I took over as president, but moving that into the public phase. The success of that, it's a campaign to raise $1 billion, of which we've now raised close to already $800 million. We've got another 3 years to go, so we'll easily raise the full amount there.
Better knock on some wood, sir.
Knock on wood, yeah. Obviously, I'm really pleased to get the master planning process underway. This week at the trustees, it may be a record. We've got about seven major new construction projects for this campus all on the agenda for the trustees, and most of those were, I think all of those, with one exception, were projects I announced in my inauguration. The International Strategic Plan, moving that forward, that's just come out. Our work in economic development under Bill Steffens' leadership. And finally, I think doing a lot to communicate what the university's doing to the citizens of the state. Since my appointment was announced on the 1st of March last year, I've given over 200 speeches all around the state and around the nation and a few overseas as well. And my wife, who's a partner with me in this, has probably given 30 or 40 speeches as well. So we've been
some of which have been from the chair that you're sitting in right now.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you the opposite question. What was the most frustrating moment of your job over the last year?
Oh, I think I would obviously not be being honest if I said that that athletics didn't cause me a lot of I have to spend a lot of time on athletics to deal with the complexity of the issues there. Firstly, obviously, well, he passed away before I took over when Coach Hip died, and then having to deal with the appointment of new football coach, eventually appointing Coach Lynch to that position. That took up a lot of time.
When you imagined your life as a university president, is that quite how you pictured it?
I didn't think I'd have to be dealing with so much so quickly. But and obviously the situation in basketball. I mean, both Coach Sampson's resignation, and then appointing the appointment of Coach Crean. But I'm hoping that we will now move into an era of stability in athletics too.
And the question always seems to come up, and we hear it expressed so often, and in some of these emails. We have so many emails. I'm trying to synthesize a lot of the topics. Let me just make that disclaimer to our listeners there, although we're open to more on a diversity of topics, noon@indiana.edu. A lot of the people just – it seems that whenever there's a problem or a shakeup in athletics, everyone starts to try to reconsider the role of athletics in higher education, and they wonder really how appropriate it is or if it is needing a reform, and things like the Knight Foundation just seem to pop up every few years. And I wonder if going through this, if your own thinking on the topic has evolved over the course of this year.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that it has just brought home to me just how essential it is for the athletics department to really be a full part of the university and to be integrated into the university's priorities. I think one of the concerns that the Knight Commission and the NCAA and others have raised is athletics can sometimes become a little removed from the priorities of the university. So I think the importance of that has been reinforced to me in the 10 months or so I've been president. And I think the other thing that's been reinforced is that we must look on all of our athletes, all of our student athletes as being exactly that, student athletes. They're here at IU to get an education. The academic side of what they do is paramount, and we must never forget that, and that must be stressed and emphasized, and all coaches and all other people working in athletics must always understand the just how paramount that is. And, of course, obviously playing by the rules and complying with the all the rules and regulations in all the various sports is essential too.
And a lot of the questions that we have here go somewhere along the lines of I see all this money being spent on a new athletics facility, and what about the academic facility that I would like to see happen? Any chance you could just review for our listeners how funding is delineated between the athletics department and the other aspects of the university?
Well, the athletics department is basically a standalone department. That is, that it gets a budget from ticket sales and other sources, and that's what it uses to cover its expenses with. The particular facilities which people are probably referring to at the moment, one is the end zone football facility and at the football stadium, and the other is the basketball practice facility, and both of those have been funded through our share of the revenues from the Big Ten network. And now it is the case that there are in fact six building projects going on at the moment on the campus. The MSB2, Multidisciplinary Science Building 2, the Data Center, the Hutton Honors College, and the Optometry Research Center. And we'll have another six or seven underway as of this trustees meeting. So I think you're about to see maybe almost an unprecedented boom in the building of academic research facilities and related facilities on this campus, probably unparalleled for maybe 50 years.
Which is to say nothing of everything that's going on in the area of residence life.
Well, I was including that in it, but that's right. Yeah, right. I mean, our goal there, as you know, is to basically renovate all of the dorms over about the next 10 to 12 years. So that's about 11,000 beds. And I've said before on this very program that I think the quality of our dorm rooms is in many cases not what it should be if we're to attract the best students, and that's becoming an important part of attracting good students. And we need to bring all those dorms up to modern standards.
We're talking with Indiana University President Michael McRobbie here on a special edition of Noon Edition, and we have about 20 more minutes left with him, and we're welcome to your calls on a variety of topics. 877-285-9348 is the toll-free number. The phone number to call in the Bloomington calling area is 855-0811. Mr. President, let me ask you, we hear constantly about the diminishing state support of the university, and I'm wondering if you could quantify that in some more specific terms for our listeners. Is the state contribution really going down from year to year, or is it that it's just not keeping pace with the increase in expenses?
I think it's a little of both. It depends on the budget. By any means, some years we pick up a little more some years. We have effectively a modest cuts. But if you take into account the cost of the higher education enterprise and inflation and so on, it's total. I don't have the exact figure in my head, but I remember rightly it's something like, I think over the last maybe 15 years, the total amount of our budget that comes from the state's fallen from about 30% now to just over 20%. And the trend line continues down, not precipitously down, but slowly down.
And what are the consequences of that beyond the basic dollars and cents? Do you think that it's important for Hoosiers across the state to feel personally invested in this, their public university?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I completely agree with that. This is the state's flagship university, Indiana University, and I think people both expect that and want that. But I am also mindful of the fact that the state has a whole variety of priorities, and economic times fluctuate from okay to poor, fairly regularly. We're probably sadly moving into probably a difficult couple of years or difficult rest of the decade, I think, anyway, in that regard, and hopefully won't be, but we have to be prepared for that. But one of the real strengths of higher education in the United States is the diversity of funding. And obviously we want to sustain our state funding, and we also want to see if we can persuade the state, as we have in the past and as I hope we will in the future, to fund special initiatives. We took a pretty aggressive life sciences initiative to them last time. This year we'll take a new health sciences initiative to them that'll be in partnership with Purdue, as was announced by myself and President Cordova earlier this week. And we have in the past got special funding for information technology in certain other areas. So I see the way forward is probably that our basic budget from the state is not going to change much, but that we will hope to be able to persuade the state from biennium to biennium of some important new initiative that we're taking. We were looking for specific support for that.
That's interesting.
Brian.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Nina on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Nina. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, after all the problems that the athletic department has had, has been facing the last few years, especially regarding the basketball program with the coaches, I was wondering, President McRobbie, if you will ever direct those to Rick Greenspan and what you think his role has played in this problem.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to get into fine detail about these kinds of matters. I certainly have confidence in the athletics director, and one has to view his achievements in their totality. And there have been many, many areas where he's made fine achievements. And I think getting Coach Crean, I think, is a great achievement that he can take a lot of personal pride into. I think he will be a fine coach for us. But I am really interested in looking forward here rather than rehashing what may or may not have happened in the past. I mean, I don't think anything's to be served by doing that. And we have new coaches in both our major sports. We have fine fine coaches and fine athletes. I just met the women's rowing team the other night who are a wonderful bunch of young women who just won the champs program too. And that's another team we should be very proud of. And so I'm really firmly fixed on the future here, not the past.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Nina.
Thank you.
Let's go to the phones again. We have Phil waiting patiently. Hi, Phil.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
What's your question?
Regarding IU sports, I was wondering, why does IU license the use of its logo, the interlocking insignia, IU interlocking insignia, to brewery companies such as Budweiser or Miller this year, when IU's trademark policy explicitly prohibits that?
I'm not aware that we do, but I really can't say anything more. I will.
It's in liquor stores all over town.
I will seek to get an answer on that.
Particularly,
I will seek to get an answer on that question.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Phil. 877-285-9348 is the toll free number. You can also make a local call 855-0811. noon@indiana.edu. We have about 15 minutes left with President McRobbie here on Noon Edition today, and we're very honored to have him with us. Looking ahead to the future, let's go back to the issue of funding a little bit. So you're talking about trying to get the legislature to focus a little bit more on specific projects as they look at your overall budget request. are there projects that you think that will be particularly attractive to members of the legislature that you'll bring to them, and what would those be?
Well, it will be projects in the life and health sciences. There's no doubt that there's a combination of issues there. One is the health of Hoosiers, how to improve that. On most rankings of public health, obesity, cancer, diabetes, et cetera, we rank right at the bottom. And I think that's a major concern to policymakers and legislators throughout the state. So using the very substantial resource capabilities of the university to specifically address those issues and other even more fundamental issues in the life and health sciences has been met with a lot of positive remarks from the legislature. Now, we need to also combine that with the fact that we are a major center nationally for the biomedical sciences. We have Lilly here, and we have a number of other substantial companies here. So there is the opportunity to work more closely with them to take the innovations coming out of our laboratories and see them turn into new products and treatments and services and so on as well. So that's different. That area is different, say, to information technology, which is really harder to be prominent in on the same scale as a place like Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Silicon Valley is such a colossus. There's no way anybody could ever get close. The biomedical sciences, there's not the equivalent of the Silicon Valley of the biomedical sciences.
That said, I mean, it's amazing how when you travel around the country, there are so many areas that are trying to do precisely what Indiana is doing.
Oh, sure.
St. Louis, Michigan. I mean, everybody wants to be the next biomedical mecca. How do you make sure that Indiana ends up being just
I mean, there's no guarantee we can do it, but I mean, it's the area where I think we have our best chance for competitive advantage in the new economy and new areas of technology, and that's a combination of things: really outstanding basic research and very fine applied research too on this campus, fine clinical research and other basic research at Indianapolis, the nation's second largest medical school, and a lot of other related areas of good research up there, biomedical engineering and so on. And then when we combine that with the strengths that Purdue has in this area as well, you start to assemble a pretty formidable range of research expertise in the broad research enterprise across our three major research campuses. Combine that with the medical education center scattered around the state, and it starts to have a statewide impact as well. So I think it's the area where we have the best opportunity. As I said, also combine that with the major companies in this area who are resident in Indianapolis and elsewhere. The orthopedic industry in Warsaw is, I believe, the biggest single concentration of such companies in the world. And so we do have a really major competitive advantage there over many other states, that if we can bring it all together in a more sort of coherent, organized way, gives us at least an opportunity to be competitive with the places that you mentioned and other places like Baltimore and San Diego and Boston.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Nasreen on the line.
Hello.
Hi Nasreen. You're on the air with the president.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. President.
Hi.
I am bringing a subject that perhaps because I arrived late this afternoon to listen to this wonderful discussion. Perhaps
we're glad to have you now, so go ahead with your question.
I would like to ask about the state of the arts in this university. It seems to me, as everybody is complaining in the field of the arts, that there is minimum, if any, support and sponsorship for the arts, and especially for an important venue as a multi-art. And I was wondering if there is anything new or any hope to have for this. There is the frontiers of knowledge, but that's for the professors, usually for the graduate students and for the others. There isn't that much, especially for graduate students. So this is my question.
Well, let me say a couple of things there. Firstly, we're about to start the construction of a new music building, a new music practice and rehearsal building, which has been funded with a $44 million gift from the Lilly Endowment, for which we are extremely grateful as always. Then the new international building that I announced that we're moving towards the start of will house all of our major most of our major programs in the international areas of the humanities that are concerned with foreign languages and the study of foreign cultures and so on. And that building is in the vicinity of $40 million plus, and we are starting the renovation of the old university theater and part of the area behind it and turning that into a new cinema complex for the scholarly study of film and for the use of film in the curriculum, which is becoming increasingly more common around the country. The total investment in those three facilities will be in the range of $100 million, which I think is about the biggest single investment in the arts and humanities on this campus, probably for at least 50 years. Then you combine that with the New Frontiers program that you were referring to. That is certainly open to graduate students, certainly in conjunction with professors. And that's put $1 million a year into the support of the arts and humanities, mainly the arts. And there's a wonderful collection of programs that is the new initiatives that have come out of that, new works of art, new paintings, new works of poetry, new books, new plays, new dance. It's just remarkable. It's indicative of just how much pent up creativity there is out there among people in the arts and humanities. And I certainly intend to make sure that program continues.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Nesreen.
It is
something that seems to come up perennially, that Indiana University has such historic strengths in the arts and humanities over just decades of very, very proud history. And I think there was some anxiety in the community going into your presidency with someone who is such a science guy, and that's paired with all of the biotech initiatives that the state and the university are taking on, that they might get forgotten. But I hear a pretty clear message from you that that's not going to happen.
A science guy who goes to nearly every opera and concert.
That's true, exactly, yeah.
And is an art and book collector.
Well, we have time for a couple more questions here. We have 7 minutes left. 877-285-9348 or 855-0811. I want to ask a big question, which is that sometime around August, we're expecting to see a report looking at the feasibility of high-speed rail going from Muncie to Bloomington by way of Indianapolis and a couple of stops in between. And if the legislature looks at that and doesn't seem to show any movement on it, is there some kind of really ambitious or enhanced method of connecting IUPUI and IU Bloomington that you think the university might want to start looking at in its distant future?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I'm a personal lover of rail travel. I spent various periods in Europe. I was there on a sabbatical once for 6 months, and I think I hardly ever used a plane and used trains for all my travel around Europe. And it was convenient and a wonderful way to travel. And clearly, when we're talking about issues of sustainability and energy issues, where we're seeing fuel prices continuing to increase amazingly, the attractiveness of rail transport is, I think, just only going to be only but increase. I know that one of my predecessors, President Tom Ehrlich, looked at this matter and was very supportive of it, but I don't believe it went anywhere. But that was also in an era of cheap energy. I confess to not being fully across the fine detail of these issues. I will await that report with considerable interest. I certainly would will look at it very seriously in terms of how the university may support that. I think that the opportunity of linking many of the major cities in the state by a good rail system is a wonderful idea. The big problem, of course, will be where do you get the capital from to invest in it?
But I wonder if as IT becomes a bigger picture as the way that we communicate with each other, is the physical interconnectivity of all the campuses of the IU system, is that going to decrease in its importance?
I think I've heard that ever since I got here over 11 years ago, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really appear to be completely true. I without going into fine detail, because you know I'm an information technologist, I think part
I love fine detail,
but your listeners may not. but I think the issue is that collaborative technologies, the kinds of video conferencing that are available today, are still not utterly straightforward and are still not of high enough quality. I mean, you want your video conferencing technology to be like the web, as simple and straightforward to use as that, and it isn't yet. And you want the level of interaction to be comparable to the level of interaction that you and I are having sort of sitting opposite each other in the studio here, and it's not. Now, there has been recent developments that look extremely impressive that may indicate we're getting close to that. If information technologists crack the holy grail of really high quality, collaborative, easy to use technologies, then I really think you will start to see a diminishing importance in physical presence, and obviously that will impact our regional campuses as well.
We have just about 4 minutes left in the three. I'm sorry, 3 minutes left in the program. So I want to leave those 3 minutes to you, President McRobbie. What's on your agenda for the next academic year, and what are you going to do over the summer?
I think most of my summer's taken up with meetings or trips or something. Hopefully taking a little bit of vacation. I think I've also got my son's coming here to IU next year, so we have to get him organized to come to IU, and my stepdaughter's going to the University of Chicago, so we're going to need to get her organized, which leaves us with just one teenager at home. But I think some of the issues next year, and I've already indicated that we'll be looking at how to address the various sustainability challenges in front of the university. I've already made that clear. Secondly, I think we're going to need to look at healthcare costs. It's a major area for the university. Remember that the Clarion Hospital system is IU and Methodist. I mean, that really, when you see Clarion, you should always view that as IU Methodist. And I've been talking informally at the moment to Dean Brader and to Dan Evans, the CEO of Clarion, about how we might work more closely together to reduce our healthcare costs. It's one of the major problems for our budget is how rapidly they grow.
And one thing that we haven't heard about in a while was the proposal for an IU health clinic for personnel, for faculty and staff.
I put that on hold when I became president because at the moment, I may change my mind, but at the moment my view is we can probably do that a lot better in other ways, especially with this close relationship with Clarion that we do have.
All right. 10 seconds left in the program, Mr. President. Anything you'd like to say to all of the faculty and students who are hitting the books right now, anything to get them through final season?
Oh, well, to my faculty colleagues, my thanks for all you've done to not only sustain our reputation but to increase our reputation as a great research institution, and to all the students, work really hard to get through those exams as well as you can, and I'll see you at graduation.
Well, President McRobbie, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been a special edition of Noon Edition here on WFIU. We'll be broadcasting it for a second time on Monday. We'll also have it available via podcast probably somewhere around 5 o'clock this afternoon. I'm Adam Ragusea for producer Catherine Hageman and engineer Mike Pascash. Thanks so much for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.